After Donald Trump's defeat, there was a measure of hope among Republicans who opposed him that control of the party would be up for grabs and that conservative pragmatists could take it back. But it's become obvious that political extremists maintain a vice-like grip on the national and state parties, and that the process of fielding and championing House and Senate candidates in next year's elections. The article you're about to hear has been written by Miles Taylor and Christine Todd Whitman. Miles Taylor has served as Chief of Staff at Department of Homeland Security. Christine Todd Whitman was the Republican governor of New Jersey from 1994 to 2001. She also served as head of the Environmental Protection Agency under President George W. Bush. The article has been published as an opinion piece by the New York Times. It is titled, "We Are Republicans, There's Only One Way to Save Our Party from Pro-Trump Extremists." Stay with us for more. After Donald Trump's defeat, there was a measure of hope among Republicans who opposed him that control of the Republican Party would be up for grabs and that conservative pragmatists could take it back. But it's become obvious that political extremists maintain a vice-like grip on the national and state parties as well as the process for fielding and championing House and Senate candidates in next year's elections. Rational Republicans are losing the party civil war, and the only near-term way to battle pro-Trump extremists is for all of us to team up on key races and overarching political goals with our longtime political opponents, the Democrats. This year, we joined more than 150 conservatives, including former governors, senators, congressmen, cabinet secretaries, and party leaders, in calling for the Republican Party to divorce itself from Trumpism, or else lose our support, perhaps with us forming a new political party. Rather than return to founding ideals, Republican leaders in the House and in many states have now turned belief in conspiracy theories and lies about stolen elections into a litmus test for membership and running for office. Starting a new center-right party may prove to be the last resort if Trump-backed candidates continue to win Republican primaries. We and our allies have debated the option of starting a new political party for months and will continue to explore its viability in the long run. Unfortunately, history is littered with examples of failed attempts at breaking the two-party system, and in most states today, the laws do not lend themselves easily to the creation and success of a third political party. So for now, the best hope for the rational remnants of the Republican Party is for us to form an alliance with Democrats to defend American institutions, defeat far-right candidates, and elect honorable representatives next year, including a strong contingent of moderate Democrats. It's a strategy that has worked. Donald Trump lost re-election in large part because Republicans nationwide defected, with 7% who voted for him in 2016 flipping to support Joe Biden, a margin big enough to have made some difference in key swing states. Even still, we don't take this position lightly. Many of us have spent years battling the left over government's role in society, and we will continue to have disagreements on fundamental issues like infrastructure spending, taxes, and national security. Similarly, some Democrats will be wary of any pact with the political right. But we agree on something even more fundamental: foundational, democracy. We cannot tolerate the continued hijacking of a major U.S. political party by those who seek to tear down our republic's guardrails and who are willing to put one man's interests ahead of the country. We cannot tolerate Republican leaders in 2022 or in the presidential election in 2024 refusing to accept the results of elections or undermining the certification of those results should they lose. To that end, concerned conservatives must join forces with Democrats on the most essential near-term imperative, blocking Republican leaders from regaining control of the House of Representatives. Some of us have worked in the past with the House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy, but as long as he embraces Donald Trump's lies, he cannot be trusted to lead the chamber, especially in the run-up to the next presidential election. And while many of us support and respect the Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell, it is far from clear that he can keep Donald Trump's allies at bay, which is why the Senate may be safer remaining as a divided body rather than under Republican control. For these reasons, we will endorse and support bipartisan-orientated moderate Democrats in difficult races, like Representative Abigail Spanberger of Virginia and Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan and Senator Mark Kelly of Arizona, where they will undoubtedly be challenged by Trump-backed candidates. And we will defend a small nucleus of courageous Republicans such as Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, Peter Meyer, and others who are unafraid to speak the truth. In addition to these leaders, this week we're coming together around a political idea, the Renew America Movement, and will release a slate of nearly two dozen Democratic, Independent, and Republican candidates we will support in 2022 midterm elections. These renewers must be protected and elected if we want to restore a common sense coalition in Washington, but merely holding the line will be insufficient. To defeat the extremist insurgency in our political system and pressure the Republican Party to reform, voters and candidates must be willing to form non-traditional alliances. For disaffected Republicans, this means an openness to backing centrist Democrats. It will be difficult for lifelong Republicans to do this, akin to rooting for the other team out of fear that your own team is ruining the sport entirely. But democracy is not a game, which is why, when push comes to shove, patriotic conservatives should put country over party. One of those races is in Pennsylvania, where a bevy of pro-Trump candidates are vying to replace the departing Republican Senator Pat Toomey. The only prominent moderate in the primary, Craig Snyder, recently bowed out of the race, and if no one takes his place, it will increase the urgency for Republican voters to stand behind a Democrat, such as Representative Connor Lamb, a centrist Democrat who's running for the seat. For Democrats, this similarly means being open to conceding that there are certain races where progressives simply cannot win and acknowledging that it makes more sense to throw their lot in with a center-right candidate who can take out a more radical conservative. Utah is a prime example, with a best hope of defeating Senator Mike Lee, a Republican who defended Donald Trump's refusal to concede the election, is not a Democrat, but an independent and former Republican, Evan McMullin, a member of our group, who announced last week that he was entering the race. We need more candidates like him, prepared to challenge politicians who have sought to subvert our Constitution from the comfort of their safe seats in Congress. And we are encouraged to note that additional independent-minded leaders are considering entering the fray in places like Texas, Arizona, and North Carolina, targeting seats that Trumpist Republicans think are secure. More broadly, this experiment in coalition campaigning, uniting, concerned conservatives and patriotic progressives could remake American politics and serve as an antidote to hyper-partisanship and federal gridlock. To work, it will require trust building between both camps, especially while fighting their side-by-side in the toughest races around the country by learning to collaborate on voter outreach, sharing sensitive polling data, and synchronizing campaign messaging. A compact between the center-right and the left may seem like an unnatural fit, but in the battle for the soul of America's political system, we cannot retreat to our ideological corners. A great deal depends on our willingness to consider new paths of political reform, from the halls of Congress to our own communities. The fate of our republic might well rest on forming alliances with those we least expected to.
Ocean of Dua. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned.
اللهم اغفر لي الذنوب التي تحبس الدعاء اللهم اغفر لي الذنوب التي تنزل البلاء اللهم اغفر لي كل ذنب أذنبته وكل خطية أخطأتها اللهم إني أتقرب إليك بذكرك وأستشفع بك إلى نفسك.
Imam Ali alayhi salam in this part of the prayer is asking his Lord to forgive the sins which hold back supplication. اللهم اغفر لي الذنوب التي تحبس الدعاء. Now, loving Almighty Allah's enemies and befriending Allah's enemies is caused by an ill heart. Because we have been ordered, and not just that, we feel that inside ourselves, that we should love goodness, we should love Almighty Allah's friends, and hate wickedness and the wrongdoers. As we say in the Ziyaratul Ashura, إِنِّي سِلْمٌ لِمَنْ سَالَمَكُمْ وَحَرْمٌ لِمَنْ حَارَبَكُمْ. I am at peace with those who are at peace with you. And I am the enemy of your enemies. So, if someone acts vice versa, then he is ill-hearted. He should cure his illness with the Quranic verses. Otherwise, he should accept the consequences in this world and, of course, the last world. The Holy Prophet ﷺ and his disciples were hard to the disbelievers and kind to the religious brothers. The Holy Quran says, Muhammadun Rasulullah, وَالَّذِينَ مَعَهُ أَشِدَّاعُ عَلَى الْكُفَّارِ رُحَمَاءُ بَيْنَهُمْ. Muhammad is the messenger of Allah, and those with him are hard against the disbelievers and merciful among themselves. So, as you can see, the people who are with their prophets, who are with the Messenger of Allah, cannot be carefree of what is going on around them. They cannot say that we do not want to befriend, nor do we want to be the enemies of someone. It cannot be so. The criterion for our mercy and the criterion for our being hard against some people is their belief or disbelief. This Holy Quran recommends the believers, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا لَا تَتَّخِذُوا عَدُوِّي وَعَدُوَّكُمْ أَوْلِيَاءَ. O believers, take not my enemy and your enemy for friends. As you can see, the best example is the Prophet himself. He loved the people who loved the religion of Allah, and he was the enemy of the enemies of the Almighty Allah and his religion. So the verse says, do not take my enemy and your enemy for friends, تُلْقُونَ إِلَيْهِمْ بِالْمَوَدَّةِ, offering them love, وَقَدْ كَفَرُوا بِمَا جَاءَكُمْ مِنَ الْحَقِّ, as they have disbelieved in truth that has come to you.
O first of the foremost, O last existence after the last, O Allah, forgive me my such sins which tear away my safeguards. O Allah, forgive me my such sins as would bring down calamity. O Allah, forgive me my sins that would change your favor. O Allah, forgive me my sins that would hinder my supplications. O Allah, forgive me my sins which descend misfortunes. O Allah, forgive my sins that suppress hope. O Allah, forgive every sin that I have committed and every error that I have earned. O Allah, I seek to draw myself nearer to you through your invocation, and I pray to you to intercede on my behalf, and I beg you by your benevolence to draw me nearer to you and grant thankfulness towards you and inspire me to remember and to invoke you. O Allah, I ask you, begging submissively, humbly and awe-strickenly, to treat me with clemency and mercy, and to make me pleased and content with what you have granted me, and cause me to be modest and unassuming in all circumstances.
Many narrations suggest that if you are with the one who is the enemy of the Almighty Allah, you should expect its adverse consequences in this world. In one case, one of the companions of the Infallibles was ordered by the Holy Imam to leave his friend, which was kind of the enemy of the Almighty Allah, because that friend of him was about to receive the chastisement of the Almighty Allah, and if he were with his friend, he would join him in that chastisement as well. And only one small aspect of this chastisement in this world and hereafter is the hindrance of the acceptance of our prayers. The Holy Quran states in Mujadila chapter, لا تجد قوما يؤمنون بالله واليوم الآخر يوادون من حد الله ورسوله. You shall not find any people who believe in Allah and the last day to be loving to anyone who opposes Allah and His Messenger. وَلَوْ كَانُوا آبَاءَهُمْ أَوْ أَبْنَاءَهُمْ أَوْ إِخْوَانَهُمْ أَوْ عَشِيرَتُهُمْ. Although they were their fathers, or their sons, or their brothers, or their clan. So, the criterion for being a true believer, to be from among the ones who are يُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ وَالْيَوْمِ الْآخِرِ, the ones who believe in Allah and the last day, is to befriend who the Almighty Allah and His Messengers have befriended. to be the enemy of the enemies of the religion, Almighty Allah and His prophets. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
It was an attack that killed dozens. The death toll could be around 150. A bombing at a Shia mosque in Afghanistan's northeastern city of Kunduz during the Friday prayers. It was the worst attack since the Taliban took over control in August. All victims of the attack were Hazara Shias. Their community has been targeted by repression and violence in Afghanistan for decades now. The Daesh terrorist group has claimed responsibility for the suicide attack. Daesh has repeatedly targeted the Shia community across Afghanistan in the past. Experts believe this recent attack targeting the Kunduz mosque served several purposes for Daesh. One of their goals could be attempts to undermine the Taliban's newly established government. The other could be to continue their long-running murderous campaign aimed at ethnically cleansing the minority Hazara Shia community, who constitute roughly 15-20% of the country's population. The tragic incident drew condemnations from Iranian officials. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, condemned the attack, calling on Afghan officials to punish the perpetrators. Ayatollah Khamenei urged Afghan authorities to take measures to prevent such terrorist acts. Also, Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi voiced concerns about the persistence of terrorist attacks in neighboring Afghanistan. He stated that the growth of the Daesh terror group has been a U.S. job and that Washington has supported this group in Afghanistan. Also in a Sunday phone call with his French counterpart, Emmanuel Macron, Raisi said the world must hold the United States to account for supporting terrorism fomented by Daesh Takfir Group and other new forms of this ominous phenomenon. In addition, Iranian Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bagheer Ghalibaf condemned the attack, warning that the Afghan nation's enemies seek to stoke ethnic and religious discord in the country by using terrorists, who are backed by the United States. Also, Iraq's top Shia cleric, Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani, denounced the attack, saying Islamic nations and the international community have left the Afghan people alone. He called on Afghans to strengthen their national unity and solidarity and take steps to protect civilians from Daesh terrorists.
We know it's very clear that Daesh is supported by the U.S. and the Zionists. We've seen how they tried to disrupt Iraq and Syria and try to cause a major destabilization in these two countries. Luckily, there was strong resistance and unified resistance and a unified force to defeat Daesh and destroy them fully and eradicate them from the area.
In a message on Saturday, leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has called on Afghanistan's authorities to punish the perpetrators behind the Friday terrorist attack targeting worshippers at a packed Shia mosque in the northern Afghan city of Kunduz. The bitter, tragic incident involving a blast at the mosque of Khanabad district of Kunduz province, which resulted in the deaths of a large number of faithful worshippers, saddened us. Authorities in the neighboring and brotherly country of Afghanistan are seriously expected to punish the bloodthirsty perpetrators of this heinous crime and take necessary measures to prevent a recurrence of such tragedies. In fact, Daesh terrorists have claimed responsibility for several attacks in Afghanistan in recent weeks. This has put the Taliban under pressure because the newly formed rule vowed to provide safety for Afghans when it took power in August. Therefore, the Taliban has vowed to find and punish the perpetrators. They also have destroyed a cell belonging to Daesh terror group in the capital, Kabul, recently.
You know, we're hoping that the Taliban will make the right moves and treat this as a terrorist attack on its people. And this obviously shows a sign of weakness for the Taliban if they do not prosecute these criminals and these terrorists. And it shows that there is an open door, an open hand to attack people inside Afghanistan, and that show a bad sign for Afghanistan's new administration. So if they really want to show strength, and they want to show unity, and they want to show that they are in control, they must prosecute these criminals, and also to stop further attacks like this that could cause sectarian problems as well in the whole region.
Former Afghan President Hamid Karzai had once said in an interview that the U.S. is colluding with Daesh in Afghanistan and allowing the Takfiris to flourish in the conflict-stricken country. In addition, many U.S. officials have confessed to Washington being responsible for Daesh's creation. Now that this unholy child of Washington's flawed policies in the Middle East is causing trouble, it's likely that we are going to see a major confrontation between Daesh and the Taliban in the near future. Britain grapples with a full-blown crisis. Labor shortages, truck drivers in particular, have disrupted supply chain activities and caused several problems. The significant lack of drivers meant deliveries of fuel and food were falling short. As a result, the country witnessed panic buying of fuel and some goods dwindled. These events triggered chaotic scenes across major cities, leading to long lines at gas stations and fistfights among drivers. Also, many factories and businesses are struggling with rising energy bills. They are on the verge of halting production and closing down unless the government immediately acts on spiraling natural gas prices. In fact, the crisis has already forced a wave of collapses among energy suppliers. This is while the government is planning to impose a levy on gas bills, which could push the prices further. The British government is now under fire for its handling of the crisis. So, being under intense pressure, the British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, blamed the trucking industry for Britain's supply chain mess. The industry called Johnson's claims wrong and pointed to the government's immigration policy and delays in testing and certifying new drivers as the main culprits. The government also claimed there is a global shortage of drivers. However, the European countries have not faced a similar problem. Britain faces a shortfall of 100,000 drivers. 20% of those are drivers who departed Britain after the country voted to leave the European Union. In addition, about 200,000 EU citizens left Britain during the coronavirus pandemic. So, how does the British government address the crisis? By introducing a short-term visa program. But by offering short-term visas to foreign truckers, the British government is admitting that exiting the EU was a decisive factor in the current crisis. In addition, many people are reluctant to uproot themselves and move to Britain for temporary and difficult work while they have better options in EU member state countries.
It's a crisis of the free market, a triumph of the free market. The government abandoned regulation, it abandoned public ownership, so it's private ownership. So we're depending for energy in Britain on people who make lots of profits out of energy shortages. So, you know, if it's to someone's advantage to see gas and electricity prices shoot up, then they're going to go up. They're not going to say, oh, we're not going to take profits because it's bad for the economy. They're going to say, hey, send me more.
Households that spend a high proportion of their income on energy bills are considered to be in fuel poverty. Currently, 4 million people in Britain are already in fuel poverty, while up to 1.5 additional British households won't be able to afford to heat and power their homes. Last October, the government raised the energy price cap to control the sharply rising wholesale gas prices. The cap limits the impact of soaring energy prices on British households. The UK energy regulator said that the price cap must rise again next year if wholesale gas prices continue to go up. This could mean a typical customer paying between £400 and £600 more annually. That's while natural gas prices are at record highs as economies around the world begin to recover from the COVID crisis.
The government in Britain has recently cut back on the minimum payments for welfare and support for all sorts of people, from unemployed to underpaid to pensioners. So a lot of the apparatus that was very leaky, the very leaky safety net we already had in Britain has been torn up, and the government has decided that people, as a matter of conscious policy, they think that people only go to work if they're starving, so they're trying to starve people. And that includes freezing them. Freezing and starving will get them to work is what they think.
The price rises had already pushed 500,000 more households into fuel poverty. Unable to pay heating and energy costs, these low-income families are at a great risk. Many actually die every year because they can't afford to heat their homes. In fact, 8,500 people died in England and Wales last winter due to cold homes. All in all, the British government should stop blaming others and start cleaning up the mess it is responsible for.
In another sign of growing tensions in ties between Washington and Beijing, the United States Central Intelligence Agency announced the formation of a group that would focus exclusively on China. The CIA argued in a statement that the China Mission Center aims at addressing what it called global challenges to the U.S. competitiveness posed by the People's Republic of China. According to the U.S. spy agency, those issues include emerging technologies, economic security, climate change, and health.
The real threat that China poses that the United States is referring to is the ability to undermine the empire. And when we see that right now, that there's definitely a global shift going on, which is starting to move from the West towards the East, of which China is the main power in this situation.
The announcement comes amid a wider prioritization by the administration of President Joe Biden on countering Beijing. In June, Biden announced a new task force at the Pentagon to assess and respond to Beijing's military challenge. The United States and China remain at odds over several issues, including the situation in Hong Kong, U.S. relations with Taiwan, trade, commerce, and a disputed South China Sea. U.S. President Joe Biden has repeatedly vowed to re-engage with the international community, marking a departure from his predecessor Donald Trump's foreign policy. In the case of China, however, it appears that he's following in the footsteps of Donald Trump's America First stance against Beijing. Top U.S. counterintelligence officials have reportedly warned that a concerning number of CIA informants are being captured and executed. According to the New York Times, the warning came in a top-secret memo the officials issued to all of the CIA stations and bases around the world last week. The memo suggests that the agency's Counterintelligence Mission Center looked at dozens of cases in the last several years involving foreign informants who had been killed, arrested, or most likely compromised. The cable itself was not necessarily unique, but as the Times notes, announcing the specific number of killings is rare, as the information is usually kept strictly under wraps by intelligence officials.
And this has been something that was significant enough that it was leaked into the mainstream media where it was reported on. It seems the United States sees this as possibly a potential crisis and something they need to reinforce with more bodies.
According to the Times, recruiting spies has always been highly risky. However, the cable warned that the CIA has not excelled in the area recently for reasons that include being too trusting of sources, underestimating foreign intelligence agencies, and moving too quickly to recruit informants while ignoring potential risks.
It's frankly acknowledged that everybody is spying on everybody else because everybody needs to know what their competitor is doing with regards to their stance towards them and what plans they have, etc. So in this regard, the United States is not doing anything new, nothing that it has ever done before. But the main bulwark of this, the main reason this is happening, is the U.S. is trying to expand its current intelligence network.
The report says that the uptick in the compromised informants highlights the growing prowess of other countries in employing innovations like biometric scans, facial recognition, artificial intelligence, and hacking tools to track the movements of CIA officers in order to discover the sources. The memo suggested that the U.S. spy agency overestimated its capacities and underestimated its adversaries. The results show that countries targeted by U.S. espionage are becoming more capable of exposing agents than ever before.
U.S. social media giant has come under scathing attack by a former employee. The company has been accused of putting profit over everything else. Former Facebook employee Frances Hogan says that the company's sites and apps are harmful for children. She's also accused the social media platform of stoking divisions in society. 37-year-old Hogan was previously a product manager at the company. Now she's a whistleblower and has turned against Facebook. She made the accusation at a hearing in the Senate. Hogan accused Facebook of putting profit over safety and compared it to tobacco companies, arguing that a company with such frightening influence over so many people, over their deepest thoughts, feelings, and behavior, needs real oversight. She also said that if left alone, Facebook will continue to make choices that go against the common good.
If you look at the way that they filter content, if you look at the way that they censor certain topics that they'd rather not be seen, the way that they quote-unquote fact-check some of the things, the way that they delete accounts without discretion, the way that they censor people, and the way that they choose what content goes at the top of your newsfeed or shows up on your newsfeed at all through their algorithm, they really have a grip on what it is we are able to see on Facebook.
The context for the hearing were materials that she had leaked to the Wall Street Journal. According to the documents, Facebook's own studies suggest that Instagram and social media in general have a negative psychological effect on young girls. She also accused Facebook's CEO Zuckerberg of having too much power and bringing up the January 6th Capitol riot.
Facebook wants you to believe that the problems we're talking about are unsolvable, They want you to believe in false choices. They want you to believe that you must choose between a Facebook full of divisive and extreme content or losing one of the most important values our country was founded upon, free speech. That you must choose between public oversight of Facebook's choices and your personal privacy. That to be able to share fun photos of your kids with old friends, you must also be inundated with anger-driven virality. They want you to believe that this is just part of the deal.
Facebook has faced growing scrutiny and increasing calls for its regulation. Founder Mark Zuckerberg hit back, saying the latest accusations were at odds with the company's goals. In a letter to the staff, he said that many of the claims were illogical and pointed to Facebook's efforts to fight harmful content. The CEO argued that while Facebook took the initiative to create a massive research project to identify and solve certain problems, critics are merely weaponizing that work against the company to create a false narrative. Responding to Hogan's claims that Facebook's attempts to limit harmful content were constantly hampered by a shortage of staff, he said, "If we did not care about fighting harmful content, then why would we employ so many more people dedicated to this than any other company in our space, even ones larger than us?" Facebook is the world's most popular social media site. The company says it has 2.7 billion monthly active users.
So I think overall it's very detrimental to democracy because of the flow of information that is so tightly controlled through Facebook. And I also think it shows, much like tobacco companies in the past or vape companies, that they've targeted children who are in very crucial developmental stages in their lives in order to get new customers, as noted in the testimony before the Senate.
Hundreds of millions of people also use the company's other products, including WhatsApp and Instagram. But it has been criticized on several fronts, from failing to protect users' privacy to not doing enough to halt the spread of disinformation.
Facebook, as I said, can truly decide what shows up in your newsfeed, what gets attention, what is put in the spotlight, and what is suppressed. And I think that's a big problem. It doesn't matter who you're friends with or who you like or the groups you're in, etc. They can filter stuff out through including certain ads. They can bury stuff in their algorithms. They can ban or censor or suspend accounts that may or may not go against the terms of service. Sometimes it's not so clear whether or not certain users go against terms of service, but find themselves banned or suspended anyway.
The accusations against the social media giant came amid a worldwide outage of the company's platforms. The social media services went down for almost 6 hours, impacting more than 3.5 billion users worldwide. The global outage and the revelations seriously harmed the media giant's status in the world as a reliable media platform.
The lies.
The Greek Postal Service has come up with an innovative idea to speed up the mail sorting process, not by humans, but a fleet of robots. 55 tiny yellow robots powered by artificial intelligence are helping employees in Hellenic Post Sorting Center. They scan postal codes to identify the bundle's destination, weigh the parcels, and put them in related platforms. The program aims to handle increasing number of packages from online shopping, especially during the pandemic.
The end result is a threefold increase in sorting speed of parcels, ensuring next day delivery for our customers. These autonomous mobile robots are energy efficient, thus directly reducing the energy consumption of the sorting process, and that way allowing us to take a greener approach to operations.
According to the company, up to 80% of mail sorting has been passed to the four-wheel robots. Each day, these little machines manage around 168,000 packages weighing up to 15 kilograms. Every 4 hours, they need recharging, which takes 5 minutes.
Underwater museum in Turkey is offering a unique opportunity to its visitors, diving back in time. A World War I era naval battle site turned into an underwater park on Turkey's Gallipoli Peninsula, and it has recently opened its doors to the public. The area is known as the graveyard of navies and includes dozens of shipwrecks from battles dating back to the early 20th century.
One of the most exciting things about diving is shipwrecks, of course. They remind you of the past, and it's like a time machine that takes you back to 1915.
The British Royal battleship HMS Majestic is one of the first ships that divers see as they start their underwater journey. The vessel sank during the First World War and rests more than 24 meters below the ocean's surface, but it still remains intact. Remains of 14 British, French, and Australian warships are over there. Museum officials say they want the site to become a new hub for divers who wish to explore historical events.
Russia has sent an actress and a director to space to make the world's first movie in orbit. The crew blasted off from Kazakhstan for the International Space Station along with a cosmonaut and successfully reached the orbit. They spent 4 months on preparation for the flight. After 12 days in space, they will return to Earth. The movie, named Challenge, is about a doctor who goes to the space station to treat an astronaut with a heart ailment. Russian officials say the project will help tarnish the nation's space glory. Australian scientists have developed artificial structures that act as a much-needed habitat for marine life.
It's extremely exciting because we have seen a total of more than 90 species colonizing these diverse panels. And we see 30 to 40% more species on the panels in the living seawalls than on the unmodified parts of the seawall, so the seawalls with no panels. So that's extremely exciting and really gives us confidence to scale this up to other environments and other artificial structures.
The project has installed over 1,000 artificially designed panels onto seawalls in Sydney. These craggy concrete panels are 3D printed and designed to last for at least 20 years. Only a short time after installation, they turned into a cozy new home for the fish, crustaceans, and other marine life.
So we have more fish in Sydney Harbour than we have in the entire UK coast. So we have more than 500 species of fish in the harbor, so that's quite impressive. But what we notice is that urbanization and the human settling, especially towards the coast, has a lot of impacts on this amazing marine environment, and that's what we are trying to mitigate a bit with the living seawalls. By attaching these panels that mimic natural features such as rocky shores and rock pools and crevices and nooks and crannies.
After becoming popular in Australia, the panels were also installed in Wales and Singapore. The scientists say since the installation of these panels, the quality of Sydney's harbour water has improved. They hope coastal structures built in the future would be ecologically sustainable, designed not only for humans, but for nature.
Plastic pollution has become one of the most pressing environmental issues as disposable products overwhelm the world's ability to deal with them. Indonesian activists have come up with an idea to convince people to rethink their habits and say no to single-use bags and bottles. Environmentalists have created a museum made entirely from plastic waste in the town of Gresing in East Java. It took them 3 months to collect used plastic items, ranging from bottles and bags to sachets and straws. They were all assembled from polluted rivers and beaches. The centerpiece of this museum is a statue whose skirt is made from single-use sachets of household items. The museum has become a popular location for selfies and has received more than 400 visitors since it opened last month.
I will definitely change my life habits. For example, like when I go to the market or to a grocery store that provides a plastic bag, I will switch to a tote bag. And when I buy a drink, I will use a tumbler.
Environmentalists say the plan behind the exhibition was to send a message about the world's worsening ocean plastic crisis. The plastic problem is particularly acute in Indonesia, a nation that ranks second only behind China for its volume of plastics that end up in the seas.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
People around the world celebrate the changing seasons in different ways. In the U.S., an annual pumpkin contest is held to kick off the fall season. Each year, farmers and vegetable enthusiasts from across the U.S. gather in New England for the competition. Anyone bringing the largest homegrown pumpkin gets the prize. This year, a man from Abington, Connecticut, got the prize for his pumpkin weighing more than 2,000 pounds. Alex Noel explains how he worked hard to produce that giant pumpkin.
A nearly unlimited amount of work goes into producing a 2,000-pound-plus pumpkin. I put about 1,000 hours a season into 2 to 3 giant pumpkins, and you're lucky if you even get that many by the end of the year. I'm out there watering, fertilizing, keeping excess water off if it's too rainy, which it was this year, spraying insecticides, spraying fungicides, pruning, training vines, dropping up leaves at the end of the season, putting blankets on when it's cold out, heating cables, fans. I mean, the list goes on and on.
The New England Giant Pumpkin Weigh-Off began at the Topsfield Fair in 1984. That year, the winner showcased a pumpkin weighing 196 kilograms. The weigh-off has received worldwide recognition, too. Syria's ancient city of Aleppo seems getting a taste of normalcy amid reconstruction efforts in the war-ravaged city. A Syrian historian has also been contributing to make the city regain its lost glory. Ala al-Sayed is working to faithfully restore the lost sections of Aleppo's old city. For that, he is using documents and clippings he himself saved during the early years of the conflict. He says he came up with the idea to digitalize those documents in 2013. Then he embarked on organizing newspapers, books, and pamphlets while scanning each one to add to his digital library. Following the liberation of Aleppo, Ala came back to the city and started renovating historic places which are on the World Heritage List.
The North Dublin suburb of Howth has a new highly efficient firefighting crew. The group has 25 members, but none of them are human.
Howth was targeted by a lot of fire, and so there's a lot of gorse here, and it's prone, it's very flammable. The ghosts, on the other hand, love gorse, so it's a win-win in that sense. I suppose the project also focuses on the old Irish goat, defining their role as a functional biodiversity crew. They're a hard-working crew, they're up for the job, they're keen to do it. It also instills key conservation grazing principles to tackle fire prevention, habitat management, and the control of invasive species. So it's the old Irish ladies that have a job to do here and are well able to do it.
The goats graze eagerly on the ample gorse bushes, which are highly inflammable and cause blazes in hot weather. The local council hopes their deployment will make Howth less susceptible to wildfires. Conservationists also hope that the project will contribute to the survival of the old Irish goats, which almost went extinct in the last century. Each member of the herd has a box around their neck with a built-in GPS device. If the goats stray too far, the gadget will ping and let the owner know.
Five Siberian tiger cubs born in a South Korean zoo have made their first public debut. The cubs were born at Everland Theme Park in Yongin in late June. Their birth brought joy and hope to wildlife enthusiasts as they are listed as endangered species. Zookeepers say it's unusual for Siberian tigers to give birth to five babies at once. South Korean people selected the cubs' names through an online vote. Many exotic fruit plants need the tropical climate to grow, but Assyrian is producing nearly 100 types of tropical fruits at his backyard in a coastal city of Tartus. Mohammed Hassan's passion for agriculture is to the extent that he left his job in media to build a farm. He managed to create a tropical environment at his compound, and that was the reason behind his success in growing fruits that are rare in many parts of the world. In fact, he has turned his farm into what he likes to be described as a tropical cave.
I came across the world of tropical fruits as some of them existed here. Many immigrants also helped me on this path. They bought me special varieties from India, South America, the Caribbean and other countries, even China. Currently, we grow 93 types of fruits.
Hassan's success has encouraged other Tartus residents to create their own farms. The government is also assisting Hassan with his unique business. His farm is now open to tourists and visitors where they can taste the products. Hassan says he has bigger plans for the future and is thinking about using his tropical environment to raise and breed rainforest animals. In Brazil, paleontologists have discovered the fossilized remains of a dinosaur that lived roughly 17 million years ago.
It's a bipedal dinosaur with short arms, around 5 meters long, and it was at the top of the food chain in the period in which it lived. It was the predator at the time.
Paleontologists say the fossil suggests a dinosaur species known as Kurupi itata was a meat eater. They found the ancient predator's remains at one of Brazil's richest sites for dinosaur findings in the city of Sao Paulo. The first piece of Kurupi itata's fossil was unearthed during an excavation work in 2002. Until the completion of the research, a model of this species would be on display at Monte Alto's Museum of Paleontology. Experts believe the discovery would help scientists better understand paleontology on Brazilian lands.
Technology plays an important role in our daily lives. This time, a French company has introduced a device to help the visually impaired to avoid obstacles. The smart electronic device detects obstacles and warns users with a beep. People with vision loss can install it on the top of their canes and receive information through headphones. The gadget helps people to dodge barriers on the ground and above that, for example, the open door of a truck.
If you hear the sound to the right, it means that the obstacle is on the right. If it is straight ahead, the obstacles are in front of you. So you change course according to what you hear. If you hear an obstacle to the left, you go to the right, and this way you can go around the obstacle.
The device costs around $2,300 and is now being used by hundreds of people in Belgium, France, Germany, Italy, and Switzerland.
Thank you. we are with you. What about